Commitment to Excellence podcast. I'm Sean Quimby. I'm the host of the show. I am here to help you and me make a commitment to excellence, to be the best that you can be, the best that we can be in anything that we choose to pursue in life. I'm a clinical social worker. I have a master's degree in clinical social work with over 25 years of various experience in the field, helping folks live better lives, healthier lives, safer lives. At this point in my career, I'm really looking to help folks maximize their potential in any and every area that they want to pursue. That's what this podcast is intended to be. So thanks for joining us. The usual housekeeping, check us out on Instagram, Commitment to Excellence, Facebook, Commitment to Excellence. There's a group just looking to try to spread the word a little bit, get things out there. Feel free to share the show. You can make posts and your stories on Instagram or Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Those things will help expand our reach a little bit as we continue to grow. And I appreciate you folks who've taken the time to do that. I appreciate you. Thanks very much. It's really helping and it's encouraging for me as I'm just kind of kicking this project off. So thanks for joining us today. Today's episode 6 of the Commitment to Excellence podcast, and we're going to talk about a tool for happiness and a better you. So just want to talk a minute about positive psychology. I think I mentioned this in episode 1 that it's been a real area of focus for me for the past 10-ish years, personally, professionally. And I think it came along at a time when I found myself losing energy for working with the population that I spent a lot of time working with. I may have mentioned that the vast majority of my professional career, I have worked with or was working with clients who were what we call mandated clients, right? They didn't really have a choice. They had to be there, or there were some sort of consequences or negative impact potentially. So they had to come or else. And the or else wasn't from me. It was from somebody else, some other authority figure, power structure, that kind of thing. And I've found that work to be very rewarding at times, but sort of shifting my focus to wanting to work more with folks who kind of want to be there, want to engage in the process, are more intrinsically motivated rather than me having to try to help them find that motive. And there's something to be said for that, obviously, that a clinician that can help someone that doesn't want to be motivated find some level of motivation and commitment, that's kind of special. And I'm not knocking it. And I've, like I said, I found that to be very rewarding for most of my career. But as I've gotten older and sort of shifted my view on things and, you know, more mature, I would argue, what I really am wanting to do at this point is work with more intrinsically motivated people, maybe people who, you know, are arguably a bit more together, for lack of a better way of saying it, that just want to maximize their potential, want to build on their strengths and find the level, like, how good can I be at X, Y, or Z? And that, I guess, is sort of how I've thought about things for the past 5, 10, 15 years. And I really am motivated to work with folks who want the same. So in that journey, I've discovered the field of positive psychology. And I've really found it represents sort of a shift in thinking. I think if you look at historically the field of psychology as a whole, more about managing symptoms, if you will, and minimizing harm and suffering and, you know, kind of from a medical model, like, let's treat the symptom, let's try to just get you functional rather than maximizing your potential, building on your strengths, that kind of thing. The field of positive psychology is really about that. And one definition that I found is positive psychology is the scientific study of what makes life most worth living. I also think for me, it's also the study of what makes life great, more so than what makes life worth living. How can I maximize my potential while I'm here? To kind of dig a little deeper into that definition, positive psychology is a scientific approach to studying human thoughts, feelings, and behavior with a focus on strengths instead of weaknesses, building the good life instead of repairing the bad, and taking the lives of average people up to great instead of focusing solely on moving those who are struggling up to normal. This is what I want to do with myself. It's what I want to do with the folks that I work with. It's what I'm trying to do with this podcast. It's what I'm doing with my coaching that I'm doing. You know, this just is really kind of what's driving me. This is just sort of where I'm at professionally. So my study of positive psychology, I've run across a lot of different concepts and strategies. So what I've found in my research, what I'm looking for, is evidence-based tools. So evidence-based means that there's some research behind it. So in this podcast, I'm going to try and talk a lot about evidence-based, research-based approaches, perspectives, tools, resources. There'll be a lot of opinion thrown in and a lot of just sort of experiential evidence on my part. But when I'm talking about real research-based, evidence-based material, I'm going to try and mention that. I'm going to try to point that out and provide the evidence to back it up. So today I'm going to reference a couple of books that have been really sort of life-changing for me, or super eye-opening, motivating from a kind of a research science-based perspective. And I'll put those books in the show notes. But I really want to talk about the tool that I have found so far that has really made the biggest difference in my life. I want to talk about that today. So just some backstory here for me. Most of my life, if you would have asked me if I was sort of a glass half full or a glass half empty guy, if I was an optimist or a pessimist, that kind of thing, I would have told you that I was a realist. I wasn't either of those things. I saw things the way they were and for how they were. And I think while there's some truth in that for many people, myself included, I think oftentimes, in retrospect, most people that say they're a realist are probably pessimists that just don't want to say they're pessimists. And I think that has been the case for me for most of my life. I tend to react negatively to things and see the worst case scenarios and what could and probably will go wrong. And I think there's, you know, maybe there's even an evolutionary basis for that, right? Like that we need to protect ourselves against the worst case scenario. And maybe our default setting is to be a pessimist and see things through that glass half full or half empty, rather, lens. Because that's safer emotionally and physically. If we're prepared for what's going to go wrong, when it goes wrong, A, we're not surprised, we're not taken off guard, and we're ready for it. So I think I've come to realize that my default setting is probably pessimism. And when I read about things, especially if they sort of feel kind of hokey or a little weird, I tend to be very skeptical. So historically, things like meditation and mindfulness practices and yoga and things like this, right? Like kind of hokey, touchy-feely, incense and hippies kind of stuff, right? Like that. Those are all things that I have met with a pretty aggressive amount of skepticism in my life. But I've come to realize that all of those things have an evidence base for effectiveness if applied appropriately. So it opened up my mind to some of the stuff. And just because I believe there's evidence in some things doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to do them, but they might work well for somebody else. So, and I've tried all of these things over the years. I've done meditation. I've done yoga. Yoga's hard for me. But I get it. I understand why there's some research and evidence for these kinds of interventions. A handful of years ago, I ran across an exercise. You can find it under Three Good Things or Three Blessings, and it comes out of positive psychology. It's something that Dr. Martin Seligman has written a lot about, and I love his work. I think he will be, in my opinion, he will be remembered as one of the most influential psychologists in modern times. So, you know, you hear about Freud and Jung and those folks that practiced originally when psychology kind of became a real field. I think Seligman will be remembered in that regard. And his books, there'll be a couple of books that he wrote that I'll put in the show notes today. But he talks a lot about this exercise, and you can find it, if you Google it, you can find more about it. But so I was reading about it in one of his books, and he was talking about the research on it. And then in a minute, I will read some of that research. But he was talking about the research, and I was like, there's no way this works. That is hokey. It would never work. I'm super skeptical. And for some reason, and I'm glad that I've gotten to a point in my life where I can do this, where I read something and I think it's complete BS, but my inclination is to just dismiss it. And for some reason, I didn't do that with this. And I think increasingly I do that less and less. My mind is more open these days to things like this. So I kind of went back and I reread it and I said, all right, the research on this is pretty profound. I'm gonna do it. And it's a journaling exercise, really. And it, just for the sake of hearing myself talk a little bit more, I'll say that, you know, generally speaking, the research on journaling is not super good, that it's very effective, that it actually can make things worse at times. But where the research on journaling seems to shine, from what I have seen, is when it's targeted, it's specific, it's goal-oriented, it's future-oriented, so it has a purpose. There's a task there. There's a reason for doing it rather than just sitting down and writing your daily memoir, right? Like Dear Diary kinds of stuff that maybe you did when you were a kid. So I would argue that the Three Good Things, the Three Blessings exercise is more of a targeted journaling assignment. So what you do is every night before bed, and I think that's a key, that it's at the end of your day or near the end of your day, you sit down and you think about what are at least three good things that happened, three things that were some kind of blessing for me today. What happened today that was good, that made me feel good, made my life better, was just a really great experience. And the trick here is that you've got to find three things no matter what. You have to come up with three things. They don't have to be big, life-altering, magical events. But what are three? And you've got to dig and find three. That is your assignment. You need to come up with three things. You need to be, in your writing, you need to be as specific as possible. You need to really define what the good thing was. And then after you write the good thing, you write what made that thing good. Why did that thing happen? And what I'm specifically looking for when I write that, and when I give this assignment to folks that I work with or people that I care about, I want to know, if I'm writing this for myself, I want to know, what did I do to contribute to this thing happening? How was it my fault? I want to take some ownership, find some ownership in it. And maybe it, you know, let's say it was something like I had a really positive interaction with somebody at work. Somebody at work gave me a compliment on something like that. What did I do to deserve it? What did I do to create that situation? I worked really hard. I went the extra mile. I did this and this and this. I interacted with this person. I had a great interaction with this person the day before, and that was why, that maybe was fuel for why we had this great interaction today. So get really specific about it and take some ownership of it. And you need to do this, like I said, at night before bed. I think that's really important, so you have your whole day to reflect on. You do this every day for, I've seen the research talk about it from a week standpoint. I've also seen research where this has been replicated. So when a study gets replicated, that means somebody else does it again and again and again. You recreate the results so that you're trying to find out if some sort of intervention or tool was a fluke. This has been replicated a bunch of different times in a bunch of different settings, a bunch of different ways. So it's holding up really good. The research on this is holding up really, really well, saying that it's effective. So you do this for, when I did it, I think I did it for a month. Did it every day for a month straight. And I noticed over time, two things. Not only did I feel happier, just sort of globally and generally speaking, I just felt happier. But what I really noticed was I started to be more optimistic, or at least less pessimistic. And it is a burden to walk around being pessimistic every day, to see the darkness and everything, to see the failure coming, to be looking for that automatically. That's kind of a heavy burden to bear all the time. And I'm not sure that it is as helpful as I once thought it was. I just sort of carrying around a chronic pessimism and slightly miserable outlook on life. And let's be crystal clear. If you know me, I am not rainbows, butterflies, unicorns all the time, or maybe even much of the time. But I am a lot more now. And, you know, some of that is just growing up, getting wiser, you know, being a little more chill. But some of it is through exercises like this. And I just went into this when I did this little experiment for whatever. I know I did it for at least 30 days. I might have did it for longer than that because I very quickly found tangible benefit from doing this. And I don't do it every day anymore. I guess I just kind of got out of the habit. I started shifting habits to other things. But I do it once in a while. And just to get into the research a little bit, I'll talk a little more about it. There's a lot of research that suggests interventions that like this, that are effective, will fade over time. But if you do, we'll call it a tune-up session. So let's say you do this every day for a month, and then you just do it once a week or once every other week or something like that, just to sort of get a booster as you go, that it will maintain the effectiveness over time. And those booster sessions can be really, really helpful, really valuable. So I'm going to read a little bit of the research from the book. And you can even find some of the actual studies online if you want to dig into it. But I'm going to read a little bit from the Hope Circuit, which is Martin Seligman. It's kind of like an autobiography, Dr. Seligman. It's a great read if you're interested. I'm not sure it's where I would recommend you begin if you wanted to read his stuff. I think I would recommend Flourish first. But anyway, I'm going to just read a couple of paragraphs from this just to give you the overview. So he's talking about the initial study, and this was done online, and there was, when you have well-controlled studies, you have placebo groups and control groups and that kind of thing. And this was a pretty well done study. I can see some potential issues with it, but for the most part, it is a really well done study. So here we go. The results from the first month were startling. 50 people fell into the severely depressed range. So timeout. So what they were looking at was, these were people who said they had issues with depression. So they went into this hoping for some help, some relief. And some people got the intervention and some people just had a control experience, which was, I'm not sure if he says, but I don't think it was nothing. Took a depression inventory and then they checked in with them at intervals. So back to the book. The results from the first month were startling. 50 people fell into the severely depressed range when they registered. The average depression score was a 34, a score bad enough to indicate that these people were in pain, suffering a lot of sadness, crying a lot, very passive, feeling no zest, and major loss of pleasure. Usually functioning very poorly, if at all, in work at home and at home. 34 is close to extreme depression. These 50 people did the exercise, the three good things, three blessings exercise, and came back to the website 2 weeks later to take their second depression test. Their depression scores on average got much better, down to a 17.2, which is right at the cusp of mild to moderate symptoms. 47 of the 50 people, so that's 94%, decreased in depression. Their happiness scores, which averaged 53.4, roughly in the bottom 10%, so again, time out here. They also were measuring depression, but they were also measuring happiness, which is a separate scale, separate score, okay? So back to the book. Their happiness scores, which average 53.4, roughly in the bottom 10% to begin with, zoomed up to 69.8 on average at post-test. This elevated them to the 40th percentile on happiness, and the 46 of the 50 people, 92%, increased in happiness. These results were comparable, perhaps superior, to the effects of medication and psychotherapy in severe depression. A colleague, Robert DeRubes, a leading outcome researcher in depression, shared some of his typical findings with me for a rough and ready comparison. Over 4 weeks, combined cognitive therapy and medication decreased depressive symptoms from 34.1 to 19.6 versus a placebo, which went from 34.8 to 24.4. So there's an overview of the results. So in this first study, folks did this for 1 week's time, and they found pretty significant results just from doing this from 1 week. So imagine if you do it longer and you do it with some consistency over time. And it, you know, this is like everything else that we talk about. It's a deliberate practice exercise. You are deliberately forcing your mind to focus on some positives, even if there aren't any there. Like, you have to come up with something. So you get home at night and you think, man, my day today was just complete garbage. There's nothing good that happened. Well, let's stop and think about that for a minute. Maybe there was just little tiny things. I had an exchange with my daughter that was really special, and she smiled and she laughed, and that made me feel great. There's a blessing. Maybe it's just, I made it home safe. The roads were crappy on my drive home tonight. We got 2 inches of snow and things were slippery, and I made it home safe. Whatever. You have to come up with at least three good things from every day. And my guess is, for most of us, we can sit down and come up with more than three good things every single day. And maybe there's some value in that. Taking some time at night to just reflect on what your day was like, what it looked like, Who did you interact with? What were your interactions like? My wife packed a snack for me, or set up some leftovers in a bowl with a cover on it so I could take them from lunch today. That was a great blessing for my day. It's a practice in deliberately thinking and shifting your mind's focus, and it can happen in as little as 7 days. That is a pretty amazing amount of time. And it just goes to show that anything that you practice deliberately, focusing on your blessings, focusing on the positive things in your life, can have a radical impact on you. So to bring this back to me, I went into this thinking that was complete BS. There was no way that this would work. And I wasn't days into it before I noticed that it worked. And I was a skeptic. So one of the things that I worry about with at least this initial study, and maybe they took care of it in later studies, was what I'm calling selection bias, where, you know, when you choose to engage in things like this, you come into it hoping, thinking that it's going to work, it's going to be helpful. I know for an absolute fact, I went into it not hoping, but for sure thinking that it wasn't going to have any impact on my happiness. I thought I was a pretty happy guy already. And, you know, in my own way, I was. But there's no doubt in my mind that as I did this exercise on a daily basis, I did not take the, and you can find these online, but I didn't take the happiness screening beforehand, nor did I do it after. But there's no doubt in my mind that my happiness score would have gone up, and for sure, my optimism score would have gone up. And I, you know, for me, and maybe for you, my lack of optimism gets me in trouble from time to time. When I expect the worst, I prepare for the worst. That's kind of a downer. And it also has the very likely potential of bringing people around you down. And you can have the opposite impact on people. I know, you know, if I'm worried about something that's going on in my professional life or in the field, there's some sort of political initiative at play that I think could potentially harm my work life. When I hear people who I respect and trust speak about it optimistically, that helps me feel better about it every single time. Even if I think they're being naive or they're wrong, there's cause for optimism. Okay, maybe they're seeing some things that I'm not. Maybe they have a better view on this than I have. And you know, if you're someone who supervises folks at work, that's the kind of impact that you have on people. When your attitude is garbage, when your outlook is garbage, that's how they're going to feel about it. People take, and that, you know, we forget about this all the time. I think that's one of my biggest downfalls as a supervisor sometimes, is forget that people that I supervise see me as their supervisor, where I've been, you know, I guess we're sort of delving into a leadership conversation that I'll save for another time. But I guess the point that I'm trying to make is optimism and your level of happiness has an impact on everybody around you, your family, your kids, your coworkers, for sure, people that you supervise at work. It's, you know, your impact on them is massive. So a little exercise like this, the three good things, can, as it starts to shift your worldview, as it starts to, you know, if you embrace it the way that I did, the way that clearly all hundreds, thousands probably at this point of other people who have taken this on and given it a whirl. And this is written about in dozens of websites and at least 3 or 4 books that I've personally read, a number of research papers. This isn't just my experience. Everybody else is having this experience too. So, you know, I would argue if there's a tool that's going to help me be a little bit happier and see the world through a slightly more optimistic lens, you know, and I for sure don't walk around with rose-colored glasses, and I, you know, I don't look at the world around me and just see that it's, you know, dancing unicorns everywhere, because clearly it's not. But I see it through a more optimistic lens. And yeah, I have to work at that a little bit. It's not my default setting. And this intervention was just a huge eye-opening experience for me. And every day, you know, my advice would be to do it for 30 days. The research talks about a week, 3 weeks. I'd shoot for 30 days. There's no downside in it. And again, you know, the research is really clear on things like this, that tune-up sessions are good over time. So, you know, I work this into my, I've talked a little bit about my daily, you know, I write out my lists in the morning and then I reflect on them at night. I build this into my nightly practice from time to time. And I just do it when I feel like it. So I don't know, probably a couple of times a month, I'll just write down, here are three great things that happened today, three blessings in my life. I really appreciate these things. And then I talk about why I appreciate them. And again, this piece is my own piece. This is not part of the research, but I see tremendous value in this, at least for myself, but I think for you too. What did you do to contribute to the good thing? And again, maybe it's just because you were in the right place at the right time, but probably not. Probably it was because you built a great relationship with somebody. You respect somebody. You did a nice thing for somebody and it got returned. Whatever it is, you can find your ownership in it. And again, this is all about me working towards having what I call an extreme ownership worldview in my life. And again, this is maybe a leadership conversation and things we'll talk more about, but I strive every day to own every aspect of my life. Every good thing that happens in my life is somehow my fault. And I truly believe that. And you might think that sounds a little narcissistic, but hold that thought, because I also try, and this is really hard, but I also try deliberately to apply it to every bad thing that happens in my life. It's my fault. I made a mistake. I did something wrong. And sometimes that hurts, right? Like, I have made a lot of mistakes in my life. I have some, you know, regrets, opportunities that I didn't pursue that I wish I had, that I have nobody to blame but myself. Mistakes I've made, times when I failed to rise to the occasion. That's my fault. Nobody else's fault. I have nobody to blame for choices that I made and decisions that I made, even if there were things that were influencing them. There's been a thing that I've been struggling with a lot lately, and there's an inclination for me to point fingers at times and blame and resent. And I'm very aware of that stuff, and I'm having a hard time with it nonetheless. But the reality is there's only one person that I have to blame for any of it, and it's the person that I see looking at me in the mirror. And there is only one person who can change it, who can fix it, who can put me on the path that I want to be on, who can do the things that I want to do. It's me. So this, we'll talk more about the extreme ownership philosophy that, you know, I've stolen from a bunch of people. So we'll talk more about that, but you know, I'm making it my own. And I think that in adding that little piece into this exercise, it's a huge thing. And yeah, sure, if you're doing three blessings, you're just reflecting on, you know, three things that you contributed positive to. But I think in the long run, there might be more value in focusing on the great things that you do rather than the negative things that you do. There are plenty of people that you're going to encounter that'll focus plenty on the mistakes that you make, the poor choices that you make. They'll give you all that feedback, and that's fine. That is part of how we improve. We've talked about this already. You can't ignore that stuff, but dwelling on it is rarely helpful. You'll pay attention to it, make adjustments, don't dwell on it. Dwelling on the positive, like, these are the things that I have done that are awesome. These are the things that I have done to contribute to the world that are spectacular. I want to do more of that stuff. I want to feel that way more often. And we get to choose how and when we do that for the most part. And this three good things, three blessings exercise, it's one way to do that, to bring attention to just all the awesomeness in your life. And you can even spin sometimes negative things into positives. I can think of plenty of situations that have sucked that I have gotten positive energy from. You know, my injuries, my illnesses, struggles, tough times with family members. There's hidden blessings in all of these things. There's opportunities to be found. You know, anything that doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? So I strongly encourage that you try this three blessings, three good things exercise every night before bed for at least a week. But I'm saying, hey, do it for a month. Sit down and don't just think about it. I think that's probably worth mentioning. I think you need to write it down. And there's a lot of reasons why you do, why I think that is very important. I think there's some neurological factors at play, but it's just about making that process really deliberate. Like, you can kind of check the dots in your mind, and I don't think it has the same effect as being really deliberate, sitting down and writing down the three good things and then specifying what made them good. And, you know, my add-on is, what was your contribution to that? Why did it happen? What did you do to cause that good thing or influence or impact or, you know, bring it to the table? What did you do? Take some ownership of it. I think that's a huge piece. It's what I did when I did this, and I still do get a lot of bang for my buck, right? And your buck is like you put $0 into it, or maybe you need to buy a pencil and a little notebook or something like that. But there's a lot of bang for your buck here. So I hope you try it out. If you try it out and you get something out of it, I would love to hear about it. Shoot me an email, post in the Facebook group. I want to try to get some chatter going on in there. I will put links to a couple of books in the show notes that I've pulled a lot of this stuff from. If you want to read about it, I think there's a research article that I might link to also, that if you want to kind of nerd out a little bit and go a little deeper into this, I'll put that stuff in the show notes so you can check it out. All right, this was fun for me today. I enjoyed doing this kind of thing. I'm mostly freestyling this. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse. I don't have a ton of notes when I go into this. I'm just kind of winging it. Sometimes I think I need to do more notes and structure and that kind of thing. And other times I'm like, that's just not who I am. So I don't know if I want to do that. But hey, you know, what do you think? I'm interested in the feedback. Again, give me a rating and review. To my knowledge, if you're listening to this today, this is going to come out on January 29th. If you're listening to this today, I don't know if I'm up on Apple Podcasts yet. Apple Podcasts are really hard to get onto. So I am told, and I am having a hard time. All of the different sites that stream podcasts, they all say it could take up to 3 weeks to get on. I don't think any of them took more than 48 hours for me, though, except for Apple Podcasts. We're at least 3 weeks into it now, and it's not up. So I'm trying to get on Apple Podcasts, but I know we're on Spotify, we're on Google. There's a couple others, iHeart. I haven't checked YouTube Podcasts yet, but YouTube Podcasts is a growing thing because they're taking over for Google Podcasts, which is kind of a bummer because Google Podcasts has sort of been my favorite, but I'm sort of shifting my personal podcast player is probably shifting to Spotify at this point. So last time I checked, we've got 13 reviews on Spotify podcast. Thanks for those of you who took the time. I really appreciate it. As I understand it, reviews kind of bump you up in the algorithm so other people can find this. And hopefully this continues to grow over time and we get more listeners and we can get more interaction. I continue to get a ton of feedback from friends and family, folk, acquaintances, folks who are listening to this. That's awesome. I'm loving it. I'm having a ball with this. I'm not doing any advertising or anything like that for this, at least not yet. Anyway, I don't know if I ever will. I kind of don't want to, but We'll see how that shakes out. But right now, the best thing that you can do to help me out, if you care to help me out, give me a review, share the podcast in your social media. That can be very super helpful. That's how most podcasts grow, is really organically anyway. So again, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. If you have any suggestions for shows, you can reach out to me. You can message me. You can send me an email, qimbycc@gmail.com. It's a great way to get a hold of me. You can message me through Instagram, Facebook, what have you. Feel free to do that. I'm hoping, if all goes well, I hit some technological difficulties, but I'm hoping to have the next episode that I release, which may end up being a midweek bonus, we'll see, will be in my first interview. So I'm pretty excited about that. If it's not the next one, it will be soon. So I'm thinking about future episodes, but if there's things that you want to hear me talk about, hit me up. Let me know. I'm happy to try to do what folks want, what folks are looking for. So plus I'm just happy to have some ideas. So again, I'll tell you, one of the good things that I'm really thankful for today is all of you listening, the feedback, the support. I can't tell you how much it means to me. All right. Thanks a bunch, folks. I hope you are in the process of making today a great day and you are making a commitment to excellence.